Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
But this is not an ignorant show. And I know that some of you are not going to want to hear what I'm about to say. I know that your reaction is going to be that this is why you come here, to get away from this sort of thing. I understand that. I do. I get that. But you cannot ignore it. And I would challenge some of you to consider why you don't want to hear about this. Why exactly is that? The United States Capitol, the seat of our government, was breached. And you want to ignore that. You just want to move on. As a nation, we were attacked. Barriers were stormed. Police officers were attacked. Terrorists with zip ties were spotted in the halls of Congress. They managed to do what no enemy of America has been able to do in more than 200 years. Yet you would rather talk about Bradley Beal going for 60 last night. Like, there's absolutely no way that the morning after terrorists stormed the United States Capitol in an attempted coup, that I'm going to start the show by talking about Tom Brady and Chase Young. I'll get to that. I will absolutely get to that later on. But when a group attacks the United States Capitol, that's going to lead the show. Just so we're clear, I don't want to be talking about this. I'd rather be talking about the New York Knicks. I'm not here to talk politics. You know this. But what happened yesterday is not politics. What happened yesterday is terrorism. I mean, pure and simple. And before you push back on that, the FBI defines terrorism as, quote, violent criminal acts committed by individuals and/or groups to further ideological goals stemming from domestic influences such as those of a political, religious, social, racial, or environmental nature. End of quote. And that's what happened yesterday. And if you have an issue with the word being applied to what happened, I suggest maybe you take a long look in the mirror, because that's what that was. And if your resistance to using that word is because they were largely white and wearing red, white, and blue, I would suggest you think about that as well. Just because they were chanting USA, USA, does not mean that they were doing anything in the name of America. You don't storm the United States Capitol and attempt to disrupt democracy in the name of America. If you were to swap out yesterday's terrorists for people with foreign accents or a different skin color, you might be tempted to call it terrorism. And then you might be thinking that it was one of the worst days in American history. I would suggest that you do not make any attempt at a false equivalency with protest. And you sure as hell better not be drawing comparisons between demonstrations against racist police violence over the summer and what happened yesterday. Don't do that. The protests over the summer were demonstrations against racist police violence. It was about protecting lives. Yesterday was not a protest. Protest is normal. Protest is good. Protest is encouraged. Nothing about violently storming the United States Capitol is normal or good, and it should not be treated as such. There should be no attempts to justify what happened. You see, language is important. Language matters because it tells you something about the country. If you saw what happened yesterday and you want to call that a protest, consider why you're doing that. As an example, Draymond Green made that very point last night after the Warriors game.
It just goes to show the policing system was built against black people. You know, black and brown people. And that's the reason those reactions are different. That's the reason someone can walk or run or bust their way through or whatever into the Speaker of the House office and put their feet on the desk like they're sitting at home on their couch. You know, storming into a building and busting out windows and carrying podiums and all that other stuff. That's not a protest. That's a terrorist attack. And so stop describing those people the same way you describe someone who just stand there and make a chant and say, we want justice, we want peace. Stop using the same word. It's disrespectful, it's ridiculous, and it's shameful, you know, to keep calling them protesters. Not protesters, they're terrorists.
And if you were wringing your hands about looters breaking windows at a Target over the summer, man, I sure as hell hope you're raging about terrorists destroying and looting the U.S. Capitol. If you were calling me over the summer angry about somebody looting a store, I hope you're on the phone to your elected officials demanding accountability and justice as well. And if some of your elected officials are the ones who are inciting this, I hope that you're lighting up their phone lines too. Because again, those weren't protesters. They were violent terrorists who breached the U.S. Capitol. They attacked police officers. They destroyed property. They stormed the office of the Speaker of the House. Members of Congress had to be evacuated. Again, if a terrorist organization from another country had tried something like that, they would be thrilled with the results. So don't come in here and call them protests or say that yesterday was in any way normal. According to reports, multiple pipe bombs were discovered, as were Molotov cocktails, numerous firearms. In other words, as horrible as yesterday was, as big of a stain as that was on American history, it could have been so much worse. And some folks showed up looking to make it much worse. And if you want to compare this to what happened over the summer, if you can't see that two different Americas actually exist, Kevin Love has got a few thoughts as well. He tweeted, quote, an absolute disgrace what's happening at the U.S. Capitol right now, and a blatant example of inequity in how law enforcement chooses to deal with those involved, end quote. Boston Celtic Jaylen Brown expanded on that theme when he spoke with the media yesterday.
Before we get started, you know, we definitely want to speak to some of the things that's been going on in our society. It reminds me of what Dr. Martin Luther King has said, that there is two split different Americas. In one America, you get killed by sleeping in your car, selling cigarettes, or playing in your backyard. And in another America, you get to storm the Capitol, and no tear gas, no massive arrests, none of that. So I think it's obvious. It's 2021. I don't think anything has changed. We want to still acknowledge that. We want to still push for the change that we're looking for. But as of yet, we have not seen it. We want to continue to keep conversations alive and do our part.
It's Jaylen Brown. In the meantime, Doc Rivers also weighed in.
You know, when you saw the protests in the summer and you saw the riots, or more the police and the National Guard and the Army, and then you see this and you saw nothing, you know, it basically proves the point about a privileged life, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, I'll say it because I don't think a lot of people want to. Could you imagine today if those were all Black people storming the Capitol and what would have happened? You know, so that to me is a picture that's worth 1,000 words for all of us to see, and probably something for us to reckon with again. You know, no police dogs turning on people, no billy clubs hitting people, people peacefully being escorted out of the Capitol. So it shows that you can disperse a crowd peacefully, I guess, would be the one thing.
That's Doc Rivers. So what we witnessed yesterday was an attack on democracy. It's an attack on America. It's not normal. It's not right. It needs to be talked about. It can't be ignored. And once again, just so I'm clear, I don't want to be talking about this. And I know a lot of you come here so you don't have to hear this or talk about it. And I'm not going to make the entire show about it. And if we can have a responsible conversation about it, we will. But there was no way that I was going to start the show and not address that. Hey, you want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back that you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. I mean, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you consider all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So, when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. He is Tory Holt. Tory, it's good to have you back. How are you, Tory?
Good, Jim. How are you? Happy New Year, bro. And look, man, I need to you need to go in and present me, bro. That was nice. I appreciate it.
Oh, my man, I might take you up on that, Torrey. In fact, I will take you up on that. Listen, the finalists for the Hall of Fame class were announced once again. You are again there. What was your reaction to hearing that news this time around?
Super cool, man. It's always exciting. It's hard, Jim. It's hard, you know. And I'm not a first ballot guy, right? So I'm a second-time finalist. And what I'm learning each time, each year is tough. And I heard Mr. Baker talking this morning on NFL radio, and he was talking about the process and how tough it is and how difficult it is. And it is. So I respect the process. I'm enjoying it. I learn something new every year. I feel like I'm getting closer and closer each year. So it's just a matter of, again, the voters, you know, really considering it, a strong consideration, and then make the right vote who they feel like is Hall of Fame worthy. And hopefully my name is called this year and I can get over the top.
We're talking to Torrey Holt. Torrey, I happen to see it that way myself. I feel like, at least from where I'm sitting, it's a matter of time before you get in. But I mean, you started to touch on this, but what's it like for you? I mean, does it feel like it's only a matter of time before you get in?
I feel that way. I do. I feel like, you know, and it's funny because the last few years that I've been talking to, you know, Mr. Baker, each year I've talked to him, I've just felt like I got close. I was the finalist. This year, again, spoke to him. I'm a finalist again in the conversation and what I'm hearing and what he's feels he's hearing about the process and how the voters think of me, again, makes me feel confident that I'm one step away. So, again, hopefully we get enough of the voters feeling the same way. But, again, I'm humbled, I'm thankful, and I enjoyed last year, Jim, again, being in the room with Hall of Famers and just hearing, watching them, how they conversate and interact with each other, the stories, how they're being honored. I said to myself, I want to be a part of that. And I'm right there. I'm knocking at the door. So hopefully I'll get the knock at the door sometime soon.
We are talking to Torrey Holt. You know, Torrey, I had Jared Allen on the program yesterday. He's another finalist. And we were talking about whether or not the Hall of Fame was a goal when he was a player. I'm curious, when did you first start thinking about the Hall of Fame as a goal? Was it something you had in your head when you were playing, or was that not on your mind at all?
No, you know, it was probably – I would say my last year when I was in Jacksonville and I started, I think I went back and watched the broadcast and I heard one of the broadcasters mention my name in regards to Hall of Fame. It's kind of when it started to dawn a little bit, hey, but maybe that could be possible, but not to the point where I put all of my energy into that. I wanted to, again, stay healthy and get back out on the football field and continue playing a game that I love and love to compete. But now that I'm retired and I really have had the chance to evaluate my career, my teammates and coaches and my journey and experience being a part of the National Football League. And even before that, man, I had a heck of a run and I enjoyed every part of it. I hope my teammates and my coaches enjoyed working with me. I enjoyed working with them, winning championships, doing things on the individual level that's Hall of Fame worthy. I was associated with that. And then doing it with guys too, Jim. I think the beauty part of it is what I'm also enjoying as well is the guys that I see like Rondé Barber now. I played against Rondé. Ask Rondé if I'm a Hall of Famer. Calvin Johnson, John Lynch. I played against John Lynch. Ask John Lynch if I'm a Hall of Fame worthy. But I'm watching these guys now get an opportunity to possibly don the gold jacket. That to me is really cool. And then Isaac and Orlando and Marshall and Kurt. My teammates that are also Hall of Famers, you know, that's a hell of a journey, man. So we'll see, bro. We'll see.
It is a hell of a journey. Torrey Holt's joining us. He's a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Torrey, when you mention your teammates, I'm kind of curious. Like, you played with so many great players. There are a number of guys from that offense that are already in the Hall of Fame. When you look back, did you have any idea how special that team was and that collection of talent at that time? Or were you so locked in on winning and the task in front of you that you didn't even realize how amazing that group was?
No, I knew we were special because I watched a lot of those guys when they were in college. What I couldn't understand was why weren't they winning? I didn't understand that when I got to St. Louis and I saw the talent and I knew a lot of the guys watching from past and it's like, man, these guys, we can win. And then once we put it together and then I really saw what I already thought was in terms of how special they were. And I saw it firsthand. I was like, whoa, I'm a part of something really special. I got to make sure that I stay on top of my game so I can stay on par with those guys. So that's what I was introduced to. That was the bar that was set for me early on, and I worked my ass off to try to maintain it and carry it on.
All Right, so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, Torrey, but you are a member of the class, and what that would mean is if you get in, you would actually go in the same weekend as Isaac Bruce, who's a member of last year's class, but their induction was postponed due to COVID. What would that mean to you, and have you allowed yourself to think about how special that would be?
Oh, my goodness, that would be amazing. You know, I spent last year in Florida, again, as a finalist and trying to get in, and Isaac was on that ticket as well, and he got in. So spending time with him afterwards and just talking about the experience and our games and how we worked together, man. It was, you know, Isaac and I, we didn't say a lot, but we understood what was expected, and we challenged each other on a day-to-day basis. Heck, all of our receivers, we all challenged each other, but watching him do it on a day-to-day basis, and now seeing that he's Hall of Fame, and I'm right there behind him. I mean, look, I consider Isaac and I one of the best duos in the National Football League history. So to be able to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a bookend with my homie would be fantastic. And I think St. Louis would love it. I think L.A. would love it. I think the whole Rams Nation would love it. And I think the National Football League, those that watched us play in the area in which we played, I think would appreciate and respect the fact that we'll both get a chance to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Agreed. Torrey Holt joining me for a few more moments. You know, Torrey, like Jared Allen, I always appreciated the fact that you're not afraid to hype today's players. In fact, I had a conversation yesterday on a podcast with Steve Tasker, and Tasker was talking about how the great Bills teams of the 90s absolutely love what they're seeing from the Bills this year. I love guys who play the game that can respect what they're seeing right now. I'm curious, who are some of the receivers playing today that you respect, you admire, that you watch?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll start on the collegiate level. Devontae Smith is incredible, the Heisman Trophy winner. Phenomenal, can take over games, can win games, can beat you in a return game, can beat you deep across the field, got hands, good route runner, plays special teams. He's really good. Devontae Adams is just tremendous. You're talking about a scoring machine at the receiver position. Devontae Adams with Aaron Rodgers is just incredible. Love the way he works his routes, being a bigger guy, but his ability to get open and consistently get open, giving Aaron the targets every single time, is just tough to deal with. He's one. B-Hop, obviously out in Arizona. Cooper Kupp and my boys, Robert Woods, and out in L.A. Come on now. I mean, you're talking about in the run game, blocking, run after the catch, route running, beat you deep, beat you running deep, particularly Coop. Those are some guys that come to mind, and others. Calvin Ridley down in Atlanta, the young boy down in Atlanta. Jefferson, the young kid in Minnesota. I mean, I can go on and on. Jim, but we have, I'll say this, the receiver position is in good shape. I'll say that. Going forward, our receiver position, I think, is in good shape. And we got some guys still coming from the collegiate ranks that's going to push the guys that are in there now.
We're talking to Torrey Holt. You know, really quickly, before you go, you mentioned Ram Nation, Torrey. So you've got Jared Goff, and he's trying to work his way back from surgery on that right thumb. Torrey, I'm curious, if you're Sean McVay, how do you go about approaching the decision when it comes to which quarterback to start in Seattle on Saturday? How do you think he's processing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll continue to look at them throughout the week of practice and how both are performing. How's Jared feeling out there? Is there any soreness, any tightness? Even during practice, are balls fluttery? Are balls not getting there? From what I heard yesterday, he looked pretty good throwing the football. And from what I saw, he looked pretty good throwing the football. Heck, even after he dislocated the thumb, Jim, and he popped it back in. Jared Goff is tough, too, by the way. Popped it back in. He threw I think he completed the ball. So I think he can play through that. It's just a matter of how healthy is he? How secure are they with him in terms of managing that ball? It's cold out in Seattle, Jim. It's cold. Jared doesn't have the biggest of hands, and he's coming in with a broke thumb. That will give me some concern. But if my QB1 tells me he's ready, he's showing me throughout the week that he's ready. He's processing information. He looks to be healthy. Mentally, he seems to be in a good place. I'm going to give him an opportunity to go out and play. But that defense playing at a championship level, Rams quarterbacks don't turn the football over. Run the ball as best they can. Make plays on the perimeter. Move in the chains. They give themselves a chance to go into Seattle and win. We played in 2003, I think it was, or four. We played Seattle three times. Beat them all three times that year. These teams are meeting again for the third time. We know the history between these clubs. The confidence is coming out of L.A., going out to Seattle should be what it is. It's going to be a great matchup.
And we know these two teams know each other really, really well. He is a Super Bowl champion. He is a 7-time Pro Bowler. And Torrey, I don't want to jinx it. I got a really good feeling about this. We'll find out soon enough. Congrats on being a finalist once again. And I always appreciate the conversation, Torrey. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim. And congratulations, too. Can I say this last thing? Congratulations to all of the finalists for this Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2021. All guys are very well deserved. Congrats, fellas.
No doubt.
Jim.
After Doug Peterson and Nate Sudfeld, I mean the Washington football team, finished off the Eagles on Sunday night. The football team itself was fired up and had every right to be. They deserve to be. I mean, they were dead in the water a few weeks back, and now they're division champs. And not only are they in, they're hosting a playoff game. I interrupt that thought because my phone's blowing up. Like, there must be something wrong, right? Somebody's looking for me. So I'm looking over at my phone. Somebody's looking for me. Something must be wrong. Oh, it's James Kelly wanting to make sure that I know that he hit 64% accurate. Yeah, I know, Head. I said that. Hey, Head, are you like 3 minutes behind on your stream? You did hear me correct myself, right, Head? I gave you credit, Head. 64. Come on, man. Yeah, I got an idea. What do you say you actually come to work physically here, and that way you can hear the show in real time, and you would have known that I corrected myself in real time? Head? I'm trying to talk about one of the games that I'm going to ask you to pick. Head? All right, so the Washington football team, they came off that field fired up. And they should, because as I mentioned, they were dead in the water a few weeks back. And not only are they in, but they're hosting a playoff game. And not only are they hosting a playoff game, they're hosting the Bucs on Saturday night. You know what that means? Tom Brady is coming to their house. So when rookie stud Chase Young left the field on Sunday, he made it really clear he was fired up for that opportunity.
Tom Brady, I'm coming. I want Tom. I want Tom.
All right, quote, Tom Brady. Tom Brady, I'm coming. I want Tom. I want Tom.
Tom Brady, I'm coming. I want Tom. I want Tom.
So obviously, the moment that clip surfaced, the bulletin board material alarm went off like a foghorn. Like, oh, hell no. He just went there. The rookie just said Tom Brady's name, and now Brady is going to come out and absolutely light him and them up. Man, how screwed is the Washington football team now? Why the hell would you ever poke that bear? Check that. Why the hell would you ever poke the goat? The hell was Chase Young thinking anyway? Way to go, Chase. Way to wreck everything that you and your team have worked so hard for. Nice going, Chaser. Or so went the thinking. So, Young has a chance to sleep on that. He meets with the media yesterday, and everybody wondered whether or not he was going to walk that back. The question was whether or not he regretted what he said. Would he, in fact, walk it back? And the rookie showed up, and he handled it like a 10-year vet.
I play ball. I'm excited to go against the best. You know, the media, that's their job, you know, to stir it up, make it a big story, full game. They needed something. They needed to get something. So they chose that. But, you know, if you know me, my team knows me, I'm excited for every game. And Tom Brady, you think I'm not going to be excited to play against the GOAT? Then you tripping. And that is what it is. I'm excited to play against Big Tom. I'm not going to apologize for saying I want Tom. No, I want Tom Brady. I want every quarterback I play against. So, yeah, that's how I'm going.
Damn right. Damn right you tripping. Damn right you tripping. If you've got a problem with Chase Young saying that he wants Tom Brady, man, you got a problem with yourself. And you're tripping. Of course he wants Brady.
Then you're tripping.
You are tripping. Why wouldn't he want Brady? What? Should he be chanting for Daniel Jones? Should the guy be asking for Chad Henne? Come on, man. If you're a competitor, you want to go against the best. To be the man, you got to beat the man. Of course, it would be easier for him to face a team that somehow had Chad Henne as their quarterback. But the best wants to face the best. Of course, Chase wants Tom. You want to face the GOAT in the playoffs, not a slug like Henne or somebody else. Man, I love the fact that Young did not apologize. I love the fact that this guy didn't back down. I love the fact that this guy didn't walk it back. In fact, I would have lost so much respect for him if he had come out after the fact and said, yeah, you know what? You know what? I got carried away. I got carried away in the moment. Yeah, I'm really sorry about that, Mr. Tom. I'm really sorry about that, Mr. Brady. I'm really sorry about that, Big Tom. I really am. Please accept my apology, Tom. Please take it easy on me, Tom. I didn't mean that. I didn't mean any of that. No, he meant that. Of course he meant that. And there was nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's awesome. If you think that Chase Young screwed up by calling out Tom Brady, man, keep moving. I know Tom Brady is a fuel guy. Most of the greats are. Most of the greats take things personally. I've got no issue with that. I mean, the guy is a fuel guy. But if you think that he's going to find a new gear because Chase Young was caught on camera saying his name, to quote Chase Young, you tripping.
And you tripping.
And why don't we talk about bulletin board material for a minute? This whole notion of bulletin board material, does it even exist? I got a better question. Do bulletin boards even exist? Like, physically, is there such a thing as a bulletin board? I mean, what? You really think that Bruce Arians is printing off a transcript of that video, cutting off the excess paper and walking it into the Bucks locker room in Tampa, taking out a thumbtack and posting up the text of it on a bulletin board? Yeah, I'm going to say no chance. I'm going to say that's not happening. I'll tell you what they are probably doing. They're probably going to spend more time focusing on how to game plan against Chase Young than they are anything innocuous this guy happened to say running off the field after a big win. And if you're expecting Tom Brady to take the alleged bait and come firing back at Chase Young, as always, you were begging.
You know, he's obviously a great young player. So, you know, we got our hands full with that D-line, one of the best D-lines in the league. So Chase is a great young player. He went to Ohio State, so naturally I think the Ohio State-Michigan thing wears off on him a little bit. I understand that. But we're prepared for, you know, a tough challenge, and should be a fun game.
Standard operating procedure regarding Brady, never says anything about anything, yet somehow manages to work in an extremely lame joke. Hey, Pops, one piece of advice. Given how your alma mater has gotten its brains beaten in repeatedly during that alleged rivalry, I'd maybe steer clear of that for now. Hey, just know this. If chasing a seventh ring and trying to jam that up the hood's ass wasn't motivation enough for this guy, and he actually just got some additional motivation from a video of a rookie geeked to go up against him in his first ever NFL playoff game, then this dude's not the GOAT that everybody's making him out to be. Washington is not in more trouble because of what Chase Young said. No, they're up against it. They're up against it because they're facing a team with a ton of weapons and a quarterback who might be the GOAT, who's got a ton of playoff experience, who is desperate to win another ring. Chase Young saying Tom Brady's name doesn't change any of that. And by the way, is that how low the bar is now? Is that what qualifies as trash talk and smack talk these days? I mean, is that now what trash talk is? If that's the case, man, we have fallen hard. We have fallen hard. If that's the case, we need to bring back some of the legends, because Chase Young saying, I want Tom, is nothing compared to Ray Buchanan teeing off on Shannon Sharp before the Super Bowl back in the day. Remember Ray Buchanan. Remember Ray said, quote, Shannon can always win because he can talk, but Shannon looks like a horse. I'll tell you, that is an ugly dude. You can't tell me he doesn't look like Mr. Ed. End of quote. That's Ray Buchanan. Now that's trash talk before a big playoff game, or in that case, the Super Bowl. And Ray was only getting started.
Shannon thinks he's pretty. He thinks he's pretty in the face. He might have a body, though. Everybody look at his body and be like, oh, Shannon. But I'm telling you what, man, if you got a grill like that, man, total reconstruction.
Ray Buchanan's like, oh, he's got a body now. But if you've got a grill like that, I'm talking total reconstruction. So you want to talk about bulletin board material. You want to talk about smack talk. Now that's trash talk. That was bulletin board material back when there were actually bulletin boards. Chase Young saying that he wants Tom Brady is just announcing who he's facing next. Not a damn thing to see here. Nothing to see here. Keep moving. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, don't make a shake, don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: old-fashioned, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. So next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Ryan Garcia. Ryan, great to have you on the show. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on the show, and I thank you guys for having me. And yeah, I'm excited. Let's do this.
Let's do this. My man, I've been looking forward to it. It's great to have you on the show, Ryan. I appreciate you and the way you go about your business. Let me talk first about that win over Luke Campbell Saturday night. Campbell was an Olympic gold medalist. He was regarded as the toughest challenger of your career so far. So before we get into how that fight ended, can you take me back? What kind of thoughts and emotions did you have in the hours leading up to that fight?
There was a lot of things that go through your mind before a fight, but specifically for a big moment in my career, there was a lot of things up and down with emotion, a lot of doubts, a lot of things trying to creep in my mind, but I fought through it, and I positioned myself to get in there calmly, and, you know, I went out there and did my thing.
Ryan Garcia, my guest. So what about the doubts? For instance, you know, you're a really competent guy. You're a really confident guy. What kind of doubts were you having going into it?
Man, there's a million things. Can I really do this? Is this my moment, or have I jumped into something too quick? I mean, there's just every thought you could think of to come to my mind, negative, did. But like I said, you got to battle through the mind just as much as you have to battle through physically.
I respect that. That's a really candid response. So you have these thoughts, and then the fight starts, and then in the second round, he catches you with a left hook that knocks you down. Just so people know, how many times had you ever been knocked down in your career to that point, and then what was going through your moment when it or your mind when it happened?
I've never been dropped, ever. I mean, that was just an experience that obviously shocked me, but it didn't hurt. It was just... If people say you see black, I seen white when I got knocked down. It was like a little quick, you know, boop. I was down, got up, was a little dizzy, but, you know, I knew that I was in control of this fight, and I knew that if I kept on pushing forward, doing what I was doing, that my determination, my will is going to do it for me. Luke Campbell's a great fighter, though, and he's somebody that I respect deeply. He came to fight. He was in the best shape of his life, and I know he wanted to win more than anything. So, yeah, that moment was a shock, but I think it was needed.
Talking to Ryan Garcia, you know what's amazing is a lot of young fighters, and to your point, like that had never happened before. And until it happens, you never know how you're going to react to it. And yet that's happening to you on the biggest of all stages. Some guys fall apart when it happens. You jump right back up. You got right back into the fight. How were you able to do that and process that as quickly as you did?
Like I said, it was just... it was a moment that I don't know if it's correct, but it felt like it was meant to be. And because I, like I said, it was such a shock to me. I lost concentration for a split second. Like I my ankle out of nowhere before I go in the fight started tweaking a little bit. And I was like, that's a little weird, but whatever, I'm going to ignore it. Then when I get in the ring, I start thinking about it for a split second. It crosses my mind. And when I look up, I get dropped. So my initial thing was, okay, I'm going to get up. I got up, and I was like, okay, I got dropped. That's what I said to myself. I got dropped, and I was like, but I wasn't losing this fight. I wasn't losing the fight. I'm going to go forward. I got him. Like, and I think Luke, everybody had a question, like, why didn't Luke jump on you? He knew not to jump on me. In the ring, you know things that people don't see on the outside because you're in there. So Luke knew that, oh, if I tried to jump on him, he might catch me. So, yeah, I just had that knowing of I wasn't losing the fight.
Talking to Ryan Garcia, that's a great explanation. He's the WBC interim lightweight champion. Then in the seventh, you finish him off with an unbelievable body shot. Can you take me through the moments leading up to that shot, and then what did it feel like to drop him with that shot?
It felt so unreal, surreal. I couldn't believe it. I said to myself, like, wow, I knew it was going to be a body shot. I've always thought it was going to be a body shot. Was it the body shot? And then when I seen him go down on two knees and he's just gasping for air, I said to myself, wow, I did it. It happened. And I just went crazy with emotion, all my – the most realest emotions I could have had in my life. I mean, mom – I'm sorry, my mom was
– It's moms. It's cool, man. Respect to moms.
I love my mom. But, yeah, so it was the most truest form of emotion after that body shot that you could ever experience. That's what people seen in that celebration after I dropped them.
Ryan Garcia is joining us. Ryan, this is such a good conversation, man. Don't ever, ever change. We're not done yet, but I just want to make the point mid-conversation. It's so good that you're able to kind of you can relate these things to listeners and to fans of what it's like to be a fighter, what it's like to be a gladiator. Take us through these moments. I think you made such a statement. Saturday you tweeted, quote, "You are not what they say you are. You are who you choose to be." End of tweet. Yeah. I love that mindset. Where does that approach come from, and what does that mean to you exactly?
Well, my whole life, a lot of kids would look at me and tell me that, one, I don't look like a boxer. Two, I'm some type of weak guy. You know, that's the impression they would put on me. And it's just things I've seen in my life where I notice people will make you feel like there's no way you can accomplish what you want. And, you know, whether it be your mom, your teacher saying, oh, don't go for the dream of being an NBA player, that's too far out, or don't, you know, or you won't graduate, or your parents telling you you're a bum or because you want to chase a music career. To me, it's like I've always had that feeling where they said, you can't be a boxer. Look at you. You're weak. You're this. You're that. And it was just a feeling in my heart to say, you're not what people say you are. It's who you choose to be. And I chose to be a fighter. I chose to be a champion. I chose to strengthen myself. So, you know, that's what I wanted to put out there.
I like it. Ryan Garcia joining us for a few more moments. You've also made it pretty clear you want Tank Davis. You want to fight Tank Davis. Why do you want to fight him, and do you think that he wants to fight you as badly as you want to fight him?
Because that's just how, that's what the people want. That's what, you know, that's my story, and that's just what I feel and I know. So second round knockout, don't be surprised when I knock him out cold second round in the second minute, and that's a promise. You'll see it, and when it happens, just know that it was said long before it happened.
It's on record. Hey, Ryan, before you go, like from where I'm sitting, I know it's one day at a time. I know it's one fight at a time. But to me, as I'm looking at you and the way you approach this and the way you're performing, I'm thinking about maybe the next 10 years. For instance, you've got a serious, serious following on social media. You're a hell of a fighter. You've got a lot of that it. You've got that megastar potential. Boxing's always looking for the next big star. Do you feel like you might be that guy? And what would that mean to you?
That would mean a lot. It would be something that I would be honored to be, I guess, the leader of boxing one day. But I plan to only be here for until I'm 26 years old. So once I'm done with my career and things that I want to do and the fighters I want to fight, I plan on to venture out into something else.
Hey, Ryan, is that the plan? Are you looking to fight maybe 4 or 5 more years and then get out? Is that your plan?
Yeah, that's my plan.
How come?
It's just in my heart. Once I do what I have to do, I plan to get out and take on a different type of battle.
What do you think that'll be?
Well, you see what the world's happening to the world right now, and I think good needs to be spread, and you know, positivity and love needs to be spread out. So I don't know. I don't know what that's going to be. Pretty much, it's, what, 4 or 5 more years away. So yeah, I don't know what that will be, but I know that I'm not going to be in here for that long.
So one final thought about that, Ryan. I mean, you're a young guy with a lot on your plate, but you have a great following. You've got this great platform. Do you think that maybe you can focus on both those things at once? Can you be a world champion and then focus on the world around you and what concerns you and try to make that difference right now?
Yes, most definitely. It's time. As you see, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of hate, and especially in this country. And I just want to make things more clear for people, and hopefully we can all come together as a unity for this country and trying to make it a better place. As you see, what you put out is what you inspire. And that is, if you inspire hate will come about. But if you inspire with love and true form of passion, that will be inspired as well. So I plan on to try to do both.
He is the WBC interim lightweight champ. He is coming off a big win over Luke Campbell, TKO on Saturday night, still undefeated, 21-0. Ryan Garcia, my man, lived up to all the hype, both in and outside the ring. Great to have you on, Ryan. Make sure you and I do that again soon.
Yeah, definitely. God bless.
Cam Hayward is my guest. Cam, it's been a minute or two since you and I spoke. Bring me up to date. How are you doing? How is life for you right now, Cam?
I'm good. I'm rested up. Got my body feeling good, hands are good, feet are good, you know, just ready to roll.
Yeah, it seems like that first point that you made is so key. You got your body rested up. Because of what you and the team had already accomplished, you were among a number of key guys that were able to sit out week 17 against Cleveland. How valuable is it then to get that kind of rest at this point of the season?
You know, I don't know how valuable it is. I want to make sure it is valuable. By the way, we play this weekend. You know, when we get an opportunity to rest, it's time for guys to recuperate and get right. But, you know, it's going to be a heck of a battle this week.
That's a great point. You're going to find out how valuable it is. I get that. So in the first week of the playoffs, it is the first week. I'm kind of curious, how does the build-up to a playoff game feel compared to a regular season game? I mean, do you try to approach it like it's just another game, or is it inherently different, and is that not the way that works?
I just think it's different, you know. It's an atmosphere where, you know, there's 14 teams left, and they all have the same goal in mind. Everybody's starting to weed down, and I just think the level of, competitive play starts to pick up, your discipline starts to pick up. I think everything enhances, good or bad. The mistakes are enhanced, and you just want to clean that up. So, you know, we've had some good days of practice, but we got to keep improving from here on out.
We're talking to Cam Hayward. You know, the team got off to that 11-0 start, and then you dropped 3 straight. After the loss of the Bengals, you said, quote, "I'm not disappointed. I'm just pissed off. We just lost the damn game. I think that's the way our team feels. We're not feeling sorry for ourselves, but we've got to get the job done. We're 2 weeks out," end of quote. So at that point in time, like, I know it's a long season, but what was the mood among the team at that point?
Well, I think it's just you want to get out of that rut, you know. As much as you want to say you're getting ready for the playoffs, it comes down to just winning one game and trying to move from there. We did that by being a good team in Indianapolis, but everybody's record is restarted now. You know, everybody's rankings are set, and now the seeding's done. So now you just have to be ready to go out and do it. You know, I think we've got over that hump, but you know, it takes patience. I think sometimes, if you don't win week in and week out, that's what it comes to. You know, going 11-0 is great, but it becomes almost a guaranteed, and we had to get out of that, you know, get that losing out of our way.
Talking to Cam Hayward, you know, Cam, the season, of course, is unlike any other, and as one of the team cap over the protocols and things of that nature to everybody else, what was the process like for you? What's the season been like for you overall?
Well, it's unprecedented. You know, I don't think anyone knew what we were getting ourselves into. As much as you want to prepare for a season like this, you're always going to be surprised with everything going on. You know, I just tried to relay as much information as I could, make sure my guys were informed. And then, you know, throughout the season, we just kept stressing discipline. You know, we understand it's a long season and there's going to be lulls and you're going to want to do all these different things, but you can't because, you know, COVID is present. We're in a pandemic, and we got to make sure guys take care of ourselves. And, you know, once you experience, you know, one guy, two guys having to deal with it, you understand that, all right, this is what's going to happen. We got to learn to bounce back from it.
Cam Hayward is joining us. Defensive line coach Carl Dunbar has referred to you as, quote, the Pied Piper because of how everybody else follows you. What's that role mean to you, and then how do you approach that position of leadership?
You know, I don't know if I call myself the Pied Piper, but, you know, I just try to lead by example. You know, I try to make sure everybody knows that where I stand, how I work, and what I expect from everybody else. And if I hold myself up to that standard, I feel like they can follow as well.
Yeah, in terms of your play, though, Cam, it seems like I'm just on the outside looking in, right? What do I know? But it seems like you've had one of the most effective seasons of your career, and it seems like you're playing some of the best football of your career. Does it feel that way to you, and how are you different now as a player than when you first came in?
Well, you know, I think the thing that's different, you know, I have more experience now. You know, when I first got here, I was behind, you know, Super Bowl greats, Troy Polamalu, Brett Kiesel, Aaron Smith, Casey Hampton, James Harrison, Lamar Woodley. These guys have won Super Bowls, and I just tried to be a sponge and learn from those guys early on. Now that I'm the older vet, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, lay the groundwork. Hopefully one day I am a Super Bowl great, but only time will tell.
I mean, those are legendary, iconic names. And then back in September, you signed a multi-year extension to stay in Pittsburgh. What's the contract mean to you, and how important is it to you to stay in that town and play for that franchise?
There's no other franchise I would ever want to play for. And it's a pleasure, it's an honor to play for this team. You know, my goal in mind was to bring a Super Bowl here because they're accustomed to them. But, you know, this just gives me the opportunity to keep playing here. But I got to earn a weekend year in and year out.
We're talking to Cam Hayward. Cam, a few weeks back you tweeted, quote, so sad to hear the news of Kevin Green passing away. I only had a couple of interactions with him, but when we did talk, he always spoke with great energy and passion. May he be at peace and his family stay strong, end quote. I got to tell you, Cam, I knew him for a long, long time. I loved talking to Kevin Green over the years. And like you, I loved his energy and his passion. What do you remember about that brief time you had with him?
I remember one time, I think they were him and Joe Green were being honored in our Steelers, I think it was the Circle. The Ring of Honor.
Right.
And so, you know, he got to talking, and you could just feel the energy. And, you know, he was just, you know, him being a defender and him wanting to get after a quarterback, the way he spoke to just the D-line and the pass rushers, you know, he was appreciative of the work we've done, but we're more appreciative of the work he's done. You know, you want to honor that guy, and, you know, we're just sad to see him go.
I appreciate your thoughts on him. Cam, so you're going to face the Browns on Sunday night. Back in week 6, you hammered them 38-7. I mean, what, if anything, are you able to take from that game that you can apply to this game? What kind of thoughts do you have on this matchup this time?
You know, I think we laid the groundwork of what we want to do. Stop the run and then get after the passer. You know, we're going into a rubber meets the road game. You know, I think Nick Chubb is their guy, and they got Kareem Hunt as well, but they like to run the ball, and when they run the ball well, they win the game. So for us to win this game, we got to stop the run like we did the first time, and then we can get after the passer. And, you know, you saw what happened once we did that.
Yeah, and you guys are really good at that too. One last thought. I mentioned off the very top that you were named the NFLPA Community MVP for Week 1. It's an honor that you received for your work installing little free libraries in underserved communities in Pittsburgh. It represented the launch of the Rufus and Judy Jordan Literacy Project. What have your grandparents meant to you? How much pride is there in honoring them that way?
I always want to honor them. My grandfather just passed away this offseason. But, you know, they've always been big in my life. They were both educators for all their lives, and they always give back to the community. And, you know, to, you know, be able to honor them and to let them know that they've had that impact on my life and they'll continue to have impact on children's lives, that's huge for me.
Pittsburgh, 12-4 on the season, AFC North champions. They're at home Sunday night against Cleveland. Cam Hayward, my guest. Cam, appreciate it so much. Great to have you back. Thank you. Good luck.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Good night now!